2020-3469. Zen Power Family Land LP at all, Solar Energies DMP USA Incorporated, formerly known as Total DMP USA Incorporated at all. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. This is your house, 25th hour.
May I remove my mask?
Yes.
Just for the record, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Scott Zurakowski, and I represent the class consisting of over 300 landowners. One of the class representatives, Mr. Zen Power, is here present today. As this court well knows, this case involves an oil and gas lease, and it was the landowner's intent to get a gross proceeds lease. In other words, a royalty paid without any deductions. The lease at issue called for royalties to be paid on gross proceeds based on sales occurring downstream without any post-production costs deducted. No prior cases have interpreted this particular royalty provision. This is not an old issue for this court. This is a new issue. This court has never interpreted this royalty provision applying Ohio law. And any decision by this court would apply to the class that this court has already deemed proper in its August 2019 ruling. The appellants would request that the federal district court's granting of summary judgment was improper and should be reversed for 3 different reasons. First, the parties negotiated a gross proceeds lease. The lease specified that gross proceeds would be based on sales occurring downstream and specifically prohibited deductions.
Can I ask, I think the hardest argument on your side might be a textual argument of what computed at the wellhead modifies. It seems to me the obvious modifier is gross proceeds, but your position is that it's not so much the money that comes in from production, but the amount of gas extracted. And I'm curious, what's your kind of best textual argument for why we should interpret computed at the wellhead to modify the amount?
Yeah. Let's be clear. There are different interpretations of this particular lease clause. The class intended to get a gross proceeds lease. Total argues that this is a net proceeds lease, basing their argument on the 4-word phrase computed at the wellhead. But computed at the wellhead, in our opinion, is where volume is calculated, not value. And it's important to note that volume must also be computed at the wellhead. So when we look at this particular royalty provision as a threshold issue, we believe that it's ambiguous and cannot be construed in Total's favor.
But where in the lease do you find the connection to volume?
Well, in the lease, you find the connection to volume where you see it says, paren, given the quantity and quality of the gas available for sale from the leased premises. When we're talking about quantity, we're talking about volume. And
why does that language specify that it is only volume that is referred to?
Because that is what the parties negotiated. And the parties also negotiated that it would be based upon the gross proceeds paid to the lessee for the gas marketed and used off of the leased premises, including casing head gas or other gaseous substances, and produced from each well drilled thereon. And it goes on to say, and without any deductions or expenses, and then defines, for the purposes of this lease, what gross proceeds means. And I think this is important. When we look at what that lease says at the end, total consideration paid for all oil, gas, associated hydrocarbons, and marketable byproducts produced from the lease premises without deductions of any kind except as provided in paragraph 44, which is the ad valorem tax provision. But look at the three parts of that royalty. All of those valued the royalty based on downstream sales. Look at the language, total consideration paid for all gas and marketable byproducts. Those byproducts that they're talking about, ethane, methane, butane, all of those are separated after the wellhead for sale downstream. It would make no sense to include their sale proceeds if they are not sold at the wellhead for sale downstream.
All right. How do you respond to the argument that this netback method that the companies are using to determine royalties doesn't actually deduct any costs? Isn't that the responsive argument? Because they're actually trying to calculate a hypothetical sale before the post-production costs would have been incurred.
We think that that argument is baloney, because when that gas comes out of the ground at the wellhead, okay, they're determining what the volume is. Okay? After that gas leaves the wellhead, it goes through gathering, transportation, compression, those types of things, before it finally comes out of the tailgate. And those costs that are incurred from the time it leaves the well to the time it hits the tailgate are all deducted from that price that is ultimately determined to pay the royalty. And we think that that is not what this lease intended to do.
Do you dispute that there is a transaction, at least on the books, at the wellhead where it goes from the main company to a subsidiary that actually engages in the processing? You're not challenging that transaction as kind of not respecting corporate form.
We are not challenging that transaction. But when you look at...
But then why isn't it the gross proceeds of the lessees?
Right.
And so the lessees, the costs that you just talked about are costs of a different company, the processors. But the lessees are the ones who pay those people the gas, and then they incur costs to make the gas more valuable and pass it on.
Well, sure, but let's talk about that affiliate sale, because the royalty provision does address that. It says, or if the sale is to an affiliated of lessee, the price upon which royalties are based shall be comparable to that which could be obtained in an arm's length transaction, given the quantity and quality of the gas available for sale from the lease premises and for a similar contract term, and without deductions, any deductions or expenses. The lease addresses that.
Why are those deductions? You could interpret the without deductions to mean deductions that the lessees incur in extracting the gas. So it's not necessarily superfluous if it doesn't cover post-production cost deductions, because those are costs that are not incurred by the lessees.
And I think that goes to our very point. If you could interpret it two different ways, then we believe that this court has to determine and find that because of those competing interpretations, that summary judgment was improper. It's ambiguous. If the court is not going to find that it's ambiguous, then the court has to look at that phrase computed at the wellhead. And what is happening is we're giving that plain language special meaning. Again, in both of those instances.
Is it special meaning that we're giving it, or is it the industry standard? I mean, the at the wellhead language is fairly common and almost always is treated in the industry as synonymous with a netback function. So why would we not, if there is not something express in this contract that rejects the existing industry standard, why would we not read at the wellhead the way the industry always reads it in the cases that we've had before this court?
Sure. And the EQT and Poplar cases that you're speaking of, they're inapplicable, because both those cases dealt with Kentucky state law that has an at-the-well default rule. Ohio has no such rule.
Certainly. I don't dispute that, but even where the industry discusses how the various formulas function, whether or not you have a default like Kentucky does, and I agree that's a distinction, they still interpret the at the wellhead language to relate to a net back.
There's no question. Yeah, there's no question the industry standard is that. But I would also note and point out to the court the Bluestone case from the Texas Supreme Court that was decided in March of 2021 after the summary judgment was granted in this case and while this appeal was pending.
How would you, if we were to distinguish Bluestone on the basis that there was no actual transaction between a company and the affiliate, what would your response to that?
It's a distinction without a difference.
Why?
Because that court made it very clear. When you have gross proceeds language and you have at the well language in the same royalty clause, then there is an ambiguity. Those two can't coexist together. They cannot be harmonized. And that came from the Texas Supreme Court, which has traditionally been a producer-friendly court when interpreting these types of phrases. So, yes, is that absolutely the industry standard? Sure. But are we seeing courts interpreting that language like this, where you have gross proceeds and at the well together in the same royalty clause as to be in conflict with one another and therefore creating an ambiguity? That's absolutely what we're seeing. Based on that, we would request that this court reverse the decision for granting summary judgment. We think this is a gross proceeds lease. If the court for some reason can't determine or can't come to the conclusion that it is a gross proceeds lease, we would ask that this court remand the case so we could determine the party's intent. Because as this court noted in its August of 2019 decision, when a contract is unclear or ambiguous, or when circumstances surrounding the agreement give the plain language special meaning, then courts should consider extrinsic evidence. And that's exactly what this court should have done.
You will have your rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Charlie Dameron of Latham & Watkins on behalf of Total Energies, E&P USA. At summary judgment, in this case, Judge Pearson thoroughly examined the lease language at issue and correctly determined that that lease language unambiguously permits defendants to sell oil and gas at the wellhead. And Judge Pearson wasn't alone in that judgment. In a companion case, the Bounty Minerals case, concerning the leases of several landowners who opted out of this class action, Judge Barker examined the same lease language and likewise determined that the leases unambiguously permit wellhead sales of oil and gas. Those rulings were entirely correct. They flow from the plain language and the basic structure of the royalty clauses in question here. Those royalty clauses specifically provide that royalties will be based on gross proceeds paid to lessee as computed at the wellhead, from the sale of gas substances so sold by lessee. And in cases of affiliate sales, the leases specifically provide that the price shall be comparable to that which could be obtained in an arm's length transaction given the quantity and quality of the gas available for sale from the lease.
What are we to make of the fact that the oil royalty provisions of the leases don't include the at the wellhead language?
Well, Your Honor, some cases they do. So in the Evelyn Young lease, the oil royalty provision tracks the gas royalty provision. I don't understand the other side to have argued that created a difference for purposes of royalty calculations for oil. I mean, with respect to the Zehentbauer leases and the Hanover Farms leases, what the oil royalty clauses say is that it's based on gross proceeds paid to lessee, so it's the same deal as in the gas royalty situation, and here, you know, the gross proceeds paid to lessee for both gas and oil are proceeds paid by an affiliated entity at the wellhead. Total pays royalties based on those gross proceeds without deductions. And so, I don't think there's a significant difference with respect to how the oil royalty and gas royalty provisions operate, except for this. The only significant difference is that in the Zehentbauer lease and the Hanover Farms lease, landowners negotiated important protection in the gas context to make sure that whatever price was paid at the wellhead, even if the gas was sold to an affiliate, that would be a fair price, that the Total and the other defendants couldn't just sell at bargain basement rates to their affiliates at the wellhead, that the affiliate sale language in the gas royalty provision provides protection for the landowners. So we think, I mean, it's, you know, it's an important provision, and there's an important difference. And in the case of the Evelyn Young lease, that protection was built into oil royalty as well.
Well, is your argument suggesting that there should be subclasses that may not qualify for the argument you're making now?
No, Your Honor. We're saying that in both cases, there's no need for subclasses. And I don't understand the other side to have ever made this argument that in both cases, in all cases, we're paying royalties based on the gross proceeds that we received in wellhead transactions, and that's consistent with the oil royalty language. It's consistent with the gas royalty language. I think that
usually you don't see the gross proceeds language combined with the netback method, right? So what is the purpose of gross proceeds language here if it's not to indicate that there won't be a deduction?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that everything has to be read in context. I mean, this is a contract that under Ohio law, that contractual language, gross proceeds, has to be read in context. And I think the most important piece of context that my friend on the other side keeps omitting is that it's the gross proceeds paid to lessee. What they're asking for, Your Honor, are the gross proceeds paid to another a separate corporate entity that's not a party to these leases. I think that's a really significant point, that we promised to pay royalties based on the gross proceeds that we received. And it's not just that. It's that these leases...
Just to follow up on the prior question, what do you make of the Texas Supreme Court's decision? That strikes me as the strongest case for the other side, that when you have gross proceeds language, and which suggests that there should be no deductions for post-production costs, and then you have at the wellhead language, which suggests there should be, that there's an inherent conflict sufficient to render it almost automatically ambiguous.
Your Honor, I think I agree. Bluestone is an interesting case, but I think there's a couple key points. One is the point you already made, Judge Murphy, which is that there's an important factual distinction with what was going on in Bluestone versus what was going on in this case. What the Texas Supreme Court said in Bluestone, and this is at page 398 of its decision, is that where you have a proceeds clause or an amount realized clause, what you're looking for in those cases is you're looking for the actual proceeds, the actual amount realized by the lessee at the actual point of sale. And in that case, the actual point of sale was way downstream. The lessee retained title to the oil and gas, improved it, refined it, and then sold it to a third party way downstream. And what the Texas Supreme Court said is, in that circumstance, you can't use at the wellhead language to get out of your gross proceeds obligation. You need to follow your gross proceeds obligation. But here, we have followed our gross proceeds obligation. Our obligation is to pay based on the gross proceeds paid to us. We sell the oil and gas at the wellhead to affiliates. Those transactions are envisioned in the lease language itself. The lease is envisioned that there is going to be sales to affiliates, and it further envisions that there's going to be sales to affiliates at the wellhead. I mean, the reason the gas royalties refer to computed at the wellhead, the fact that in the affiliate sale context specifically, the lease language refers to a price comparable to that which could be obtained in an arm's length transaction, given the quantity and quality of the gas available for sale from the leased premises. And this court has construed similar language in the Hintzroth case, which was an Ohio case, has construed from the leased premises as being a reference to at the wellhead. So in you know, this it all comes back to this case.
Didn't that case, though, use the phrase net proceeds?
It did, Your Honor. It did. The Hintzroth case did use, it was a net proceeds clause, but it did. It also referred to the court's opinion in Hintzroth at 71 said, you know, when you have at the wellhead language, we're gonna interpret that as authorizing wellhead valuation even in the absence of a sale at the wellhead. Here we have a sale at the wellhead. We have actual sales at the wellhead. We have lease language that expressly envisions wellhead transactions, and you know, I think all parts of the leases are basically pointing in the same direction here.
So I agree with you on the factual distinction of the Texas Supreme Court case, but could you arguably say that the Texas Supreme Court case adopted a rule that will promote clarity for contract parties, that if you use both gross proceeds and at the wellhead language, it should just be deemed ambiguous, and then you have to look to the extrinsic evidence? I mean, that would be a clear rule going forward, which would be beneficial to contracting parties, so they know kind of their obligations ex ante about what to put in contracts.
I think, Your Honor, that the starting point here should be Ohio law, and I'd look to this court's opinion in the Masco Corporation case. I believe your opinion in the Masco Corporation case, which talked about how you find ambiguity in a contract under Ohio law. And what that case says is that there's where, first of all, you look at the plain and ordinary meaning of the language in the contract. You don't look beyond the contract for meaning outside of its scope. And where a definite legal meaning can be assigned to the words plainly, you know, interpreted plainly based on their plain and ordinary meaning, then the contract's not ambiguous. And here you have a lease that specifically defines the term gross proceeds, that specifically refers to how those gross proceeds should be calculated, and in all events provides that royalties are going to be based on the price paid to the lessee, not to some other corporate entity. And so, you know, if this lease simply said gross proceeds, it didn't say gross proceeds paid to lessee. If it didn't say, you know, have all the language about affiliate transactions. If it didn't say computed at the wellhead, I agree under the Bluestone rule, this would be a much closer case. But that's not the lease we have here. And ultimately, under the Ohio Supreme Court's decision in Lutz, Ohio law just instructs you to look at the contract and look to what the parties were trying to negotiate.
Getting back to the contract, what do you make of the byproducts language? Isn't a byproduct, is that something that's inherently requires processing, which would suggest that you have to look at later? Or
no, Your Honor. I mean, there's with the gross proceeds, what that definition for purposes of this lease, gross proceeds means the total consideration paid for oil, gas, associated hydrocarbons, and marketable byproducts. All that means is anything that comes up out of the ground that has value, you need to pay royalties on it. And that's consistent with, at the top of the gas royalty language, you know, it's the gross proceeds paid to lessee for the gas marketed and used off the leased premises. So anything that ends up leaving the leased premises and has value, you're going to pay royalties on it. And yes, there are marketable byproducts that are produced from these wells. They are sold. You know, the royalty statements to the individual plaintiffs show breakdown royalties in three categories. One is oil. One is gas. One is NGLs, which is natural gas liquids, which is a kind of byproduct. And the plaintiffs receive royalties for all of those things. They receive them, albeit in royalties based on their unprocessed raw form at the wellhead. But that's, again, just consistent with the basic
lease. Would there have been a need to actually include that type of language, though, if all you were doing was selling the unprocessed, whatever you want to call it, gas or unprocessed product that came out of the ground, because the transaction is for that product, and all you need to do is you get a compensation just for the unprocessed.
Well, there's all sorts of, I mean, there's Your Honor, when companies are drilling for gas and oil, there's all sorts of different products that are coming up out of the ground all at the same time. Sometimes they're mixed together. Sometimes they're kind of separate. Some wells produce a large variety of, produce kind of pure dry gas, which doesn't require much refinement. Some comes up with, the dry gas comes up mixed with a bunch of different wet gas compounds. And so, I take this language just to make sure that, all of that is going to get included within the royalty calculation. And I think that, that language, again, provides good protection for the lessors to make sure that they're getting royalties based on the full value of all the products that are coming up out of the ground. Otherwise, I mean, if to the extent you're worried it's superfluous, the lease language refers to gas marketed and used off the leased premises, including casing head gas or other gaseous substance. There might be some disagreement as to whether other gaseous substance encompassed things like natural gas liquids. So the gross proceeds language at the very bottom of the lease provides protection against that. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we'd respectfully ask this court to affirm the judgment below.
Thank you.
If I could, I would like to address the cases that were mentioned by opposing counsel. The Bounty Minerals case, Bounty waived the issues. Zempower argues an interpretation of the gross proceeds language in the lease, which requires Total to bear all of the post-production costs. No such argument was made by Bounty. In fact, Bounty ignored it and expressly waived it, and you can find that in footnote 12 of the Bounty decision. The Hensroth case that was also mentioned by opposing counsel, it actually supports Zempower's position. The Hensroth lease provided for the payment of a net royalty and a gross royalty, not a gross royalty, as is the case here. I would also point out that the royalty provision in Hensroth expressly stated the royalty is not to be net proceeds from sales from the leasehold, but from gross proceeds for gas marketed and used off the lease premises. This is not an old case. It is a new case. This court has not interpreted this royalty provision applying Ohio law. And that Ohio law is found in the Lutz decision, in which the Ohio Supreme Court said, we're not going to follow an at-the-well rule. We're not going to follow a gross proceeds rule. We're going to look at each contract on its own terms and use typical contract construction rules to determine what the party's intent was. When we have the Bluestone decision from the Texas Supreme Court, a court that has, and from a state that has been pro-producer, that says when you have gross proceeds and you also have at-the-well language in a royalty provision, there is an inherent conflict. As the court stated in its decision, but on that point, we cannot agree because gross and net terms do not peaceably coexist. They cannot be harmonized together. There is an ambiguity, and we would request, because of that ambiguity, that the case be reversed and remanded.
Can I ask just for a clarification about the oil royalties provisions? And are you actually asserting those on appeal? Because there wasn't much time spent in the brief on the different language in the oil royalty provision.
We are, Your Honor, and those were a part of the briefing. I would point you to the decision from this court in August of 2019, when it expressly held, both sides argue that the leases expressly require their own respective royalty calculation method. This court, back in August of 2019, knew that there was a conflict. And when we look at the language contained in this royalty provision, and now applying the rule from the Bluestone case, which we believe provides a bright line rule. When you see gross proceeds and when you see at the well in the same royalty provision, there is a conflict, there is an ambiguity. This case should be remanded back down to the federal district court so we can actually determine the party's intent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your good briefing and arguments. They're very helpful to us. The case will be taken under advisement in an opinion rendered in due course.
Thank you.